Welcome to another edition of Acme Podcast and Company. It's been a long, long time, but we're finally back in the saddle and hoping to continue your Acme Packing Company coverage in audio form as well as in written form over the next several weeks and months as we go into the 2016 season. I am Evan Tex Western. With me, we have Jason Hirschhorn, and we're going to start breaking down free agency, the scouting combine, the 2016 NFL draft, all the fun off-season topics that that tend to come up and that we're dealing with here at Acme Packing Company. How are you tonight, Jason?
I'm doing well. Why don't we just jump in? So, Tex, you tell me, which Packers free agent signing from another team was your favorite?
Oh, man, there's so many to choose from, but I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say Jared Cook. Just you know, there's something about that splashy signing, that big name, that just really excites me.
It's really interesting that we discuss Jared Cook as a splashy signing because for, I think, almost any other team, in all seriousness, they wouldn't discuss it as a flashy sign. It would be notable. It would be discussed because, you know, for a fair amount of teams, he'd be a starter. But for the Packers, this was like treated with the fanfare that accompanied Julius Peppers signing. Like, that's how rare these moves are in Green Bay.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I keep thinking back to 2 years ago when we signed Peppers and how it was just a complete, you know, completely out of the blue and just a complete shock to everybody. And I feel like everybody had thought that the Cook was a possibility just based on the tight end position and with the market and everything, with him being released instead of being an unrestricted free agent. So I feel like it was one of those where people could kind of see the possibility coming, but it definitely still had the excitement factor that I think some people were looking for.
Yeah, primarily because tight end has been such an issue for Green Bay's offense since Sir Michael Finley's last injury. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Richard Rodgers does a lot of really good things that he actually I don't think gets enough credit for. Yep. But stretching the field is not one of them. And the Packers, even outside of the tight end position, had such a problem passing in the middle of the field last season. You know, if Jordy Nelson is back and 100%, they're able to move him to the slot on occasion, I think that is going to be mitigated to a degree just by that. And then throwing in Cook, I think those things are going to help. But without someone like Cook and without the return of Jordy Nelson, I mean, like, if Jordy Nelson is, let's just say, 75% of what he was before, and he's not able to do the things that we expect him to do, both on the sideline and, you know, down the middle of the field, we could see a lot of those same issues from 2015 crop up again, which is why, and I think we'll get into this a little bit when we talk about the combine and the draft, that it wouldn't be crazy for them to take a pass catcher fairly early.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was something that that Mike McCarthy alluded to at the combine when he was talking to reporters, that you can stretch the field deep down the middle in a number of different ways. You don't necessarily have to have that field stretching tight end if you have a guy like Jordy who can be that deep middle threat. But if, like you said, if Jordy's not 100%, if he's limited in any way in that aspect of his game, you know, having that kind of a player with Cook's size certainly as well, is definitely going to be a big thing for this offense. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how Cook and Rodgers complement each other. I'm also really, really hoping that we don't see any more of the Richard Rodgers 1 yard flat route on third and three anymore. But that's maybe that's just a little selfish and just a little blind faith in the coaching staff that we don't see that anymore. But
that,
yeah,
kind of feels like the equivalent of asking for them not to run the Kuhn dive on third and short.
Pretty much.
Like, I mean, yeah, they might not do it this year because Kuhn's not physically there. Or at least he hasn't resigned with the team yet. But yeah, the Richard Rodgers in the flat, expecting him to break a tackle and go for extra yardage, that seems to be a staple of the offense for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I think it was Aaron Nagler who said that has now supplanted the Kuhn dive as his least favorite play call in McCarthy's playbook. And that was something that I was thinking at this right around the same time that he said it. And I think he speaks for most of the Packers fans when he says that.
Well, let's move over to the rest of the Packers free agency. For the most part, that involved players leaving Green Bay as opposed to coming in. Casey Hayward, the longtime slot and occasionally outside corner, now with the San Diego Chargers, got a pretty hefty raise, though it wasn't, you know, like cap-busting money. Did it bother you, given the Packers' depth of the position, that he left for another team?
No, not in the slightest. You know, Hayward is a nice player. He's He is what he is at this point, though. It's he's proven that he's a very good slot corner, good ball skills, good quickness, but he's not going to get it done on the boundary, at least not on a consistent basis against the big top fast receivers in this league. And so I think that San Diego, that's a good signing for them because they've got a couple of solid boundary corners in Jason Verrett and Brandon Flowers. I think that's going to be a good fit for him. And I think to some extent, the league is certain teams in this league are recognizing that the value of slot corners. And, you can on the opposite side of the ball, then you've got teams that, don't give Brandon Boykin the time of day, and he signs for, I think, a 1-year deal for under $1 million, even though he's one of the better slot corners in the league. But for Hayward, certainly, I think this, it's a good deal for him. It's a deal that's more expensive than Ted Thompson was willing to pay, and I don't blame him, especially with the young depth that Green Bay's got at corner right now.
I echo a lot of the thoughts that you have, although I'll point this out. For the Packers, Casey Hayward was certainly going to be a slot corner if, for some reason, he returned in 2017. Because, Sam Shields is still there on the boundary. Demarius Randall's clearly supplanted Hayward as that other guy in the boundary across from Shields. And, the nickel or the slot is really the only place you were going to see Hayward get significant time. However, for San Diego, I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. Because if you look at those corners, Hayward's actually like the biggest and maybe even the fastest guy after Verrett. Like, he's going to play on the outside if for no other reason than they don't really have a choice. So for that reason, I think it made sense for San Diego to give him the amount of money that they gave him because they are expecting him to play a bigger role. And I think he played better in that role for Green Bay than he's given credit for. It wasn't like it was a disaster. I thought he was pretty good most of the time and had a couple of big errors, but that's true for almost all the cornerbacks. But yeah, for Green Bay, it really made sense to let him walk, especially when he got the amount of money that he got because it's not just the guys we've discussed. I mean, Ladarius Gunter looks like he's going to be a significant part of the secondary, if not a starter down the line. They're going to be able to bring in other guys in the draft because the Packers have been so good about bringing in cheap secondary talent the last several years. And, with that 2017 free agent crop that we've talked about a little bit on the site, that really, really deep group, and they're going to lose someone of consequence as it is, it didn't really make sense to throw a lot of money at a position where you're already covered.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big point that needs to be made is just how many guys we've got coming up in contract years in 2016. You've got three of your top or four of your top offensive linemen obviously coming up. A couple of your outside linebackers. You got to pay somebody to rush the passer again next year. So certainly, I imagine this was done to some extent with in the future as well as just in 2016.
All right, well, with that in mind, why don't we jump into draft talk? Because really, for the Packers offseason, that's what matters most. You were at the Combine. Why don't you share with the listeners your experience?
Yeah, the Combine is a fascinating event just because the players get trotted out in front of teams like pieces of meat. That's discussed ad nauseum at this point, but it's really kind of astounding at how some of these players get trotted out in front of the media like pieces of meat, too. You've got a couple of podiums set up for the big name guys and then for the coaches and GMs who come and give their little spiels. And then you've got these little tables for the lesser known prospects. And on the first couple of days, it's always interesting because you see some fairly big name guys come to these small little tables. And then you get this big flock of media guys coming around and sticking their voice recorders in people's faces. And then as the days go along and the coaches and GMs start to come a little slower and then eventually fade out, the setting gets a little less intimate and everybody gets, almost everyone is at a podium. So it's just an interesting vibe. And I think this year they said that there was almost three or four times as many media credentialed as there were players in Indianapolis, which is kind of astounding. But it's certainly a great opportunity for the players to show the media the personality outside of football, show them that they're human beings as well as just football players, and that's really the only opportunity outside of a little bit of the handful of weird questions and things in the meetings with teams that these guys have to really show any sort of personality at all. Everything's so focused on, well, how fast are they going to run the 40? How high are they going to jump the vertical? So that was always kind of my thought when I'm going in, walking over to a prospect's table to talk to a guy for 10 or 15 minutes. I'm always trying to think of, all right, what is this guy all about, and can I get a feel for who he is as a person, not just as a football player? So there were some really good some good interviews we got that week. Joshua Garnett, the guard from Stanford, was just a riot. He was a terrific interview. I got a chance to ask him about eating, I think it was 100 ounces of beef. No, I'm sorry, it was 10 pounds of beef at the Lawry's Beef Bowl before the Rose Bowl as a freshman, when Stanford played Wisconsin. So that was a fun one. There were a number of really interesting guys to talk to, and we can kind of get into a couple of those as we go along with the draft talk here. But as far as the event goes, it's, like I said, it's fascinating. You're crammed together with 1,000 other media members over the course of 4 days, and it's kind of a crazy experience, really.
Yeah, for me, the combine, watching from afar, it's an opportunity to see how some of these players either prove what you've seen on tape or maybe add question marks to what you've seen on tape, because there's certain things with players, especially when you talk about the skill position ones, where it looks like they can do certain things or cannot do certain things, and their performances in the drills will either back that up or on occasion make you wonder if they really can at an NFL level. In my case, one of the players I was really excited to see was Josh Doctson, because I've watched the tape of most of the top receivers, certainly had watched most of them at that point, and I thought that he was maybe not the best overall receiver prospect in this draft, but certainly the one that I thought made the most sense for the Packers because of the variety of different ways that he can challenge a defense. He reminded me in a lot of ways I liked Jordan Matthews, now with the Eagles, a lot of the similar traits that could allow him to both be a target over the middle, down the seam, and along the boundary, also very much like Jordy Nelson. So I was curious to see how he performed, and he completely blew away almost everybody's expectations to the point where now he's getting discussed as not even maybe, you know, a top half of the draft player, maybe even the first receiver taken ahead of Laquon Treadwell and Corey Coleman and those guys. So he went from being a guy I thought the Packers might be able to consider at 27 or maybe early in the second round if they traded back like they did in 2008 with Jordy Nelson, to a guy that I feel like is probably just outside of their range now.
Yeah, and Doctson was an interesting guy. I didn't have a chance to sit down with him for very long, but he's certainly got the height and the size you look for in a receiver prospect. He's got excellent leaping ability. I think he put up a 41-inch vertical in Indy. And so certainly size, speed, the leaping ability, the whole thing. And yeah, I definitely look at him as definitely one of the top overall prospects, wide receiver prospects in this draft, if not the top player at his position.
I mean, he certainly has, as I mentioned, some of the best tape you'll see from a receiver, not just this year, but in several years. He does so much and does so much well. But he went from a guy who I thought was a pretty good athlete, maybe even underrated athlete, to a guy that I think it's generally agreed on might be the best athlete at the position, one of the best overall athletes in the draft. If you follow Zach Whitman, who runs 3 Sigma Sports, he's the one who calculates a lot of these spark scores for players, that being the metric Nike originally developed to sort of describe overall athleticism. His spark score was high enough that he is in the 94th percentile of all receivers in the NFL today, or since he started keeping these numbers. So we're not just talking about one of the best athletes at his position in the class. We're talking about one of the best athletes at his position, period. And when you look at a guy that's that athletic and that skilled, you make a really compelling case for why he should be taken ahead of guys like Treadwell and Coleman, Michael Thomas, and those guys. And it just seems harder and harder to see the Packers having a chance at him if they would consider him at all.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be interesting to follow this wide receiver class in general, because it seems like there's a lot of different types of guys in this particular receiver class. You've got a lot of slot guys that I think can be, if they're used properly, they can be really, really dominant weapons from the slot. You know, a guy like Braxton Miller, if he continues his development as a receiver, he's got that elite quickness. Some of the smaller guys, Sterling Shepard had some incredible numbers out of Oklahoma. And then you've got guys like Doctson, who's, you know, he's a 6'2 guy. He's a boundary inside-outside player. You know, Treadwell is going to be an interesting guy to follow because he doesn't have the speed, but he's certainly got the physical nature to his game, and he still finds a way to create separation. So I think it'll be really interesting to follow the top 6 or 7 receivers in this draft and just follow their careers along over the next couple of years and see how they compare to, you know, that 2014 class and the receivers these last couple of years in the draft.
Yeah, your point about there being a great variety of receivers in this draft. And, like, you know, there always is, but, like, it seems like there's so many specialty receivers this year. It's a very important point. And you brought up a name that I find very interesting, Sterling Shepard, because if you look at just his physical traits and nothing else, he really reads like a slot receiver. He's, you know, a little over 5'10", 194 pounds. He's pretty quick. He's got pretty good, like, just, you know, straight line speed too. He's the kind of guy that will get compared to Randall Cobb, and for good reason physically. But if you watch his tape, he really is more of like an outside receiver. He finds ways to slip defenders, you know, deep and, you know, on post routes and corner routes in a way that makes me think that he might be a little more versatile of a player, at least as a wideout, than someone like Cobb. You have a couple other guys, too, that are really interesting. It just had different body types. You know, Michael Thomas, the Ohio State Michael Thomas, because there is two Michael Thomases in this draft at receiver. You know, he's really big body, and I think he's getting dinged a lot for being, like, just kind of looking stiff. Like, he's built like a tank. He's one of the, you know, he's like the 13th relative of Keyshawn Johnson to play receiver in the NFL. And the thing is, he's so big, and he actually moves way better than he's given credit for. Yep. I think he's actually one of the better athletes in this draft. I mean, people will focus on that 4.57 40, but you have to keep in mind, 4.57 for a guy that weighs 215 pounds is pretty quick, and all of his other measurables make you think, no, this guy's a great athlete. He ran a 6.83 cone, which is one of the best drills for determining how just, you know, quick twitch of an athlete you are, certainly at receiver. You know, anything below 7 is great, and he was significantly below it. So I feel like guys like that who will probably be available in the second round might interest the Packers. It might, you know, Michael Thomas doesn't necessarily replicate the things that they lost with Jordy Nelson last season, but he might be a better version of Davante Adams. And, you know, Davante Adams, I think, is, you know, salvageable as a player, even though he was, you know, pretty awful a fair portion of 2015. But he's like a bigger version, a more athletic version of that.
Yeah, that 6.8 cone time was the one I was going to mention as kind of showing his quickness and his agility. The other guy that I really think is an interesting player is Stanford's Devin Kajust. This is a 6'4 guy. He's around 235, so he could be, you know, he could bulk up a little bit and maybe even kind of play a move tight end role. But his cone time was insane. He ran a 6.49 cone at 6'4 and 234. That kind of a number is just, it just jumps off the page at you. And with a 4.6 40, I mean, that's some extremely impressive athleticism from a big guy like that. So I think that's an interesting name to keep an eye on, maybe in the middle rounds, early day three, something like that, as potentially a slot weapon, a guy who might even be able to play a little bit out of the backfield as kind of an H-back or a move tight end. I think that's a guy that I'll be kind of watching out for as well.
You know, it's a very interesting point about him maybe being able to play some sort of like a joker tight end. Not someone you're expecting to block maybe ever, but, you know, a bigger guy you can put in the slot, and it's just going to kill linebackers with his athleticism and cornerbacks with his size. And to go back to some of those Spark numbers that we were discussing earlier, Devin Kajus' numbers are insane. So this is not in comparison to tight ends, a group that is generally less athletic than receivers. This is in comparison to NFL receivers. He would be in the 84th percentile in terms of total athleticism. So if you're looking at a guy who's athletic by receiver standards and is big enough to be a tight end, you have to wonder if maybe that's someone that a team like Green Bay might be interested in. Because even if Jared Cook ends up being a productive player this upcoming season, he's on a one-year deal and clearly plans to cash in next offseason. You don't know that he's going to be back no matter how it plays out. So if you were to draft someone like Devin Kajust, as you mentioned, maybe late on day two, early day three, and sort of let him develop as, you know, as a tight end or maybe as a bigger receiver in preparation for the following season, I think you could be in very good shape.
Yeah, and if we're talking about big athletic receivers, we've got to put a little quick plug in for Moritz Behringer, don't we?
I mean, are we sure this isn't an April Fool's joke?
That was one of my first reactions when I started seeing the story about this guy. But, I mean, the athleticism numbers that this guy put up at FAU's Pro Day are just incredible. And how he never got any attention before just this past week is beyond me. But it's going to be real fun to see where he ends up going, because at this point, I think certainly the news is out on him, and any hope you might have had of signing him as an undrafted free agent has gone straight out the window. Now you're looking at maybe, you know, an early to middle day three pick on this guy just based on projecting his athleticism alone.
See, I'm actually going to disagree with you there, simply because I think we sometimes forget how many great athletes there are in the draft and how these numbers, as great as they are kind of overshadowing the fact that this guy basically played against you and me in a German football league. Like, Jeff Janis, who I don't think it's a really great comparison, just because I don't think there is a perfect comparison with players currently in the NFL, because he's heavier than Janis and definitely taller. But Janis is just, I think, a really good touchstone for this, because Janis, as athletic as he was and played in Division II college football, which is certainly a higher level competition than that German football league that Boehringer played in, he was barely a seventh round pick. It's such a stretch for me to think that this guy is going to get drafted, because as great as an athlete as he appears to be, there's a lot more that goes into being a receiver than just raw athleticism. Otherwise, USC would be running away with college football every single year, and we know that doesn't happen. Like, he's, again, a great athlete, but if you watch, I mean, just the highlights of him, it shows him, like, you know, conquering guys that are like 5'8", 5'9". And those are the taller people on the field. Like, it's not a high-level competition. You don't know really what he'd be able to do on an NFL field. The only thing I'm willing to say with confidence is that he has the all-time greatest farmer's tan for a football player.
Yeah, and the reason I say, you know, that it may take a mid-third day pick for him is not necessarily because I think he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a Pro Bowl receiver down the road, but I just... There's too many GMs out there that strike me as somebody's going to get blown away by his size and his athleticism and is going to be willing to take a chance on him maybe in the sixth round. That's just a gut feeling. I don't have anything to back that up. But other than just the fact that there were, you know, 30 teams at that pro day and a number of them had already been bringing them in for a visit. But as we know, the Packers, they tend to like to bring in a lot of their targeted undrafted free agent guys for their pre-draft visits anyway. So that could be as much a smokescreen or trying to get to know these guys as anything. So it'll be very interesting to watch and see where he ends up falling out though. But with a name like that, German guy, you know, he'd have to love coming to a place that's known for sausage and beer and cheese, right?
You think so. And one last point on him before we move on. So this guy was someone that I think almost literally no one had heard of, you know, as recently as a month ago. And I think within the last like couple of days, NFL.com created a draft profile for him and dug up a mugshot to put with it. Like it is amazing how quickly this guy has rocketed up, not draft board. So again, I don't think that's going to happen, but just in terms of just, you know, recognizability, if that's not even a word, but like the ability to be recognized, people would never have thought that a German-born receiver who never stepped foot on an American football field would be even considered for like a priority undrafted free agent contract, and it seems like that might be the case now.
Yeah, I'm just gonna throw this out there. I just looked up his draft profile on NFL.com. The NFL comparison.
I didn't watch it. I wasn't gonna bring it up.
It's Jeff Janis. I had to. I couldn't help myself. But yeah, like I said, it'll be fun to watch. You know, whether or not he gets drafted, you know, who knows? We'll see. My gut says he does somewhere along the line in day three. But here's to the Schwäbisch Hall Unicorns receiver. Best of luck to you out there.
I can't believe that they're the Unicorns. That's almost the best part of all of this.
It's pretty fantastic. It really is. So,
all right. So, what other positions that you saw at the combine do you think the Packers might go for early? Because we talked about receivers. That's probably not going to be something they go for in the first round. At least we don't expect it. Where could you see them going?
Well, I think certainly defensive line is the area that I think is on a lot of people's minds. Replacing B.J. Raji, whether that's at the five technique or a nose tackle. Certainly you need to come out of days one and two with at least one guy who can at least contribute in a rotation early on in his rookie year, whether that's a first round pick at 27 or if you get a guy in the second or third round. You just need somebody who can contribute at one of those spots. And especially with Mike Pinnell suspended for the first couple of games, that's going to put a dent in your depth as well. So whoever that pick is going to be, And again, I do feel that there will be one in those first couple of picks. He's going to need to be able to at least contribute to some extent early. And I think that's where Jaron Reed from Alabama is an interesting choice. He was the most recent pick in the SB Nation mock draft, and certainly he's a mountain of a man as far as a run defender goes. You're not going to get much pass rush productivity out of him early on, but and it's the kind of thing that prevents him from going to Green Bay at 27 if he is available. Certainly, Tim Thompson likes his athletic lineman. But as far as what we think Ted should do, that's a different story. So certainly a guy like Reed is a possibility. And then I tend to like the idea of going outside linebacker over inside linebacker early on. I think it was Paul Noonan in his Eight Rules of Free Agency piece talked about the theory that there are no inside linebacker prospects. There are only outside linebacker prospects who can't play outside linebacker. Kind of similar to the shortstop versus second base theory in baseball. And I thought that was an interesting way of putting it because of how many players the Packers have drafted and ended up moving to inside linebacker after they didn't pan out on the outside as a pass rusher. I kind of wonder if that's the way that the strategy is going to go again this year. Maybe guy instead of a Ragland or a Darren Lee in the first round, which personally I don't think either of those guys are going to be available at 27 anyway, but that's a different story. But maybe they take a player like Joe Schobert in the fourth and try another move like they did with Carl Bradford, only hopefully they commit to it a little earlier this time. It'll be interesting to see, but I think outside linebacker is a much more likely scenario with both Peppers and Perry having contracts that are up again at the end of this year. You certainly need to groom somebody to play that opposite side across from Clay Matthews and to rush the passer. So one of those certainly along the front seven, that's I think where the focus is going to be if you're going to draft for need. And I definitely would put my money on either an outside linebacker or a defensive lineman in round one.
Well, first of all, I am shocked that you would prefer that the Packers draft the Wisconsin linebacker over the Ohio State linebacker.
It's all about value here. Come on.
You're right. Nobody questioned the motives of noted Ohio State fan Tex Western, but
Stop. Stop it right now. Just knock it off.
I'm gonna get fired before this podcast is over. But you made a very good point, in particular about the defensive line, because Ted Thompson almost exclusively drafts better athletes at that position, and that doesn't always translate to being, the bigger names. Jaron Reed, as good of a run defender as, or even Alshon Robinson, the other big time interior defensive lineman from Alabama, are not actually particularly good athletes for their position. I believe I'm not looking at the Sparks scores for it right now, but I think they're both below average athletes for the position according to his numbers. So we are talking about guys who, while definitely productive in college, may not fit what the Packers look for. It doesn't mean it's not the move they should make. I, like you, like the idea of Reed late in the first round for a team like Green Bay because of what he can do stopping the run. I think it's something that could really help the Packers' interior. But it seems hard to imagine Thompson pulling the trigger on a guy like that. You could more likely see him going for a guy like Florida's Jonathan Bullard, a much better athlete, a guy who was reasonably productive at college, but not to the level of Reed. You mentioned the idea of the Packers more likely taking an edge rusher as opposed to an off the line or off the ball linebacker, and I completely agree. I think there's almost no way that it happens, simply because most of the time when you talk about these super elite off ball linebackers, they're going in the top half of the first round. That's where we saw more or less Ryan Shazier and C.J. Mosley go. Certainly both of those guys off the board before the Packers pick 2 years ago. It's just not likely that Ted Thompson is going to spend one of his premium draft picks on a position that, in the defense that his team uses, doesn't really have a ton of value in terms of getting the top player. Like, fans get mad about the Packers not drafting off-ball linebackers early, but the reality is, in a two-gap, 3-4 defense, those guys don't have a lot of responsibilities relative to what they might have in like a Vic Fangio 3-4 in Chicago. Like, the value isn't really there. Whereas with edge rusher, it's hard to get those guys no matter what kind of defense you're running. So if there is a top-tier edge rusher there, I think even above the defensive interior, that's the way the Packers go. And it's not just because of who's going to be a free agent after the season or maybe retiring in the case of Julius Peppers. It's so hard to find those guys when you're selecting at the end of every round. The Packers were fortunate that Clay Matthews was there at the end of the first round back in 2009. That scenario rarely presents itself. If there's a guy that they believe can be that sort of player, Thompson is going to make that selection.
Yeah, and there's a couple of interesting names that pop out to me as far as you mentioned just the athleticism. A couple of names that jump out. One in particular is Emmanuel Ogba, and we talked about him in Kurds. I think it was this morning or yesterday. Just about how he's a really interesting player because he's got this great athleticism. He's around 270, 275 pounds. He ran the fastest 40. I think he was in the 4.6s. Real good explosiveness scores and things. But he just vanishes on tape once in a while, and it's frustrating to watch him. And you see him just dominate for one series and then disappear the next. So that'll be an interesting one to see where he falls. Another guy that it might be a stretch at 27, but certainly Ted's shown that he's not above going for his guy if he thinks the value is there. Is Shalique Calhoun from Michigan State? I feel like he's not really getting as much love as he deserves in this phase of the process. He's got that prototypical outside linebacker size, 6'4.5", 250. Good long arms. He's got good speed, not great speed, but he had a solid vertical at 35 inches, and his three cone time was under 7 seconds. So that's another name that wouldn't shock me, and by all accounts, he's a class act on and off the field, and he was certainly a good interview at the combine as well. So that would be a name that it's a little under the radar, but it wouldn't completely shock me if Ted would go with a guy like that.
Do you want me to destroy your Shalique
Do
Calhoun
it.
dream right now?
Go
All
for it.
right, so here are the red flags as it relates to projecting the Packers' interest. First of all, he's over 24. He will be 25 sometime during the 2016 season. That's usually not something the Packers go for early in the draft, like not just even round one, like round one, two, three. So that's a red flag. Number two, according to the Spark numbers, and this isn't a perfect metric, but for just getting a general idea of a player's athleticism, and especially when we're talking about the Packers who favor that in their first round picks, I think it matters. He would be a below average athlete for an edge rusher in the NFL. When you consider those things, it's really hard to see the Packers spending their first round pick on him. But your point about them going maybe off script for an edge rusher in the first round or early on, I think is totally valid. I mean, Clay Matthews, even though it seems like such a slam dunk pick now because he's, been such a great player for Green Bay for so long, that guy was considered a reach for a lot of people at the end of the first round. And Thompson, by some accounts, would have taken him at number 9 overall if BJ Raji was not there. So Thompson definitely is going to go for the guys that he thinks are good football players, even if the rest of the league, or at least a large portion of the league, wouldn't agree.
Right. I think last year was a good example of that with Demarius Randle. You look at him, that's not a name that was, it was starting to get a little bit of buzz for the late first round, late in the draft process. But that was a name that, by most accounts was going to be a day two pick. So I think that kind of speaks to that. Yeah, I think that certainly, again, like we said, Ted's not afraid to go after his guy if he feels like a guy's there. And I wonder if that's a strategy that translated over to a guy like John Schneider in Seattle,
Oh, it clearly
because
did. 100%.
it had to have the Bruce Irvin pick, James Carpenter. I mean, a couple of his early picks have kind of been head scratchers, but.
I mean, Schneider's taken that actually to, in some ways, its logical extreme. They have this mentality that the college game is doing a really bad job of developing offensive linemen for the NFL in terms of like treating figuring out a way to get them to pass protect the way they should in a pro style offense and just to run block the way they should again in a pro style offense. So their attitude is if these guys need to be taught the entire game once they get here, we might as well get like the best globs of clay to mold. So that's when you start seeing some of these defensive linemen drafted relatively early in the draft to then play offensive line, which for many of these guys they've never done, not even in high school. So yeah, Schneider definitely values athleticism. We've seen this also with Reggie McKenzie in Oakland, and we're seeing it to varying degrees in Kansas City with John Dorsey. So this is definitely, part of that Al Davis mentality, the good version of that, not the crazy, let's draft the fastest receiver every year version. That has really translated for a lot of these teams that have come out of that tree.
Yeah, and I think the my favorite story about the shifting defensive lineman over the offensive line was regarding former Wisconsin nose tackle Bo Allen. who came out a couple of years ago, I think. And the book on him was that I think he was a sixth or a seventh round pick by Philadelphia. And I think it was Danny Kelly from Field Goals who heard a rumor that Schneider was really disappointed when Allen went off the board because he thought he could mold him into a really good offensive guard. So it's an interesting strategy, and to your point, if you're gonna be starting from scratch entirely, what does it matter what position they played in college if you got to reinstruct them on every phase of the game as far as offensive line play goes?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great for Seattle if they had a couple more quality offensive linemen? I mean, you know, for a team that I think most of us believe is going to be in the playoffs again next year, they probably have the worst offensive line again, which is just incredible.
Well, and I wonder if that strategy is starting to backfire. Either they're not finding the right guys, or they're just not coaching them up as well as they need to be. But you know, certainly they haven't drafted many offensive linemen highly in the last couple of years, and I do just wonder if that plus the trade that sent the Max Unger to New Orleans, obviously that was a big blow to the cohesiveness of that unit. So it's definitely something to watch, and hopefully if when Green Bay gets Seattle again this year, that'll end up being a matchup that the Packers defensive line could exploit.
So to recap, your stances are Wisconsin over Ohio State and boo Seattle.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
All right, is there anything else we need to tackle before we get going?
The one other thing that I want to mention is, as far as linebackers go, the guy that I would really like to see end up in Green Bay is Blake Martinez from Stanford, another Stanford guy. I seem to talk to a whole heck of a lot of him at the Combine, and he was a real entertaining guy to talk to, but as far as a mid-round linebacker prospect goes, he tested very well. He looked like he moved pretty fluidly in his Combine drills, and he's a guy who's also made it very clear that he wants to earn his job onto the defense through his special teams play. So certainly seems like the kind of guy that would fit in with the culture that the Packers are trying to instill. And I think that he'd make a real good pick either, you know, maybe late in round three or in round four or so.
Well, if we're going to go with off-ball linebackers, and this is just going to ensure that I get fired, but the guy I think the Packers could target, you know, late day two, more likely than day three, Ohio State's Joshua Perry, because he has a lot of the traits you think Green Bay would want in their other inside linebackers. It looks like they're going to have one of those spots locked down with either Jake Ryan or Sam Barrington, and who have somewhat similar skill sets, and maybe they want a bigger guy next to him, you know, the way Clay Matthews was the last season and a half, although he's going to be back on the outside. So Joshua Perry is about 6'4", 254 pounds measured at the combine, and he is quite an athlete. He would be in the 63rd percentile for off-ball linebackers in the NFL. So we're talking about a guy who can definitely move, a guy who's big, which will help against the run. And he does have the athleticism necessary to maybe develop into a coverage linebacker in the NFL. It's not going to happen right away. That's not something he did very much at Ohio State. But given time, that could be a long-term fixture in that linebacker group. So a guy like that, I think, would make a lot of sense for the Packers sometime middle of the draft.
Yeah, and don't worry, you won't get hammered for that one, because I'm on board with that as well. So it's tough being a displaced Badger in Ohio State country, but I can appreciate a good football player when they come along once in a while, and Perry certainly is that. And he's another example of a great off the field character too. Does a ton of charity work. He spent probably three quarters of the time in his combine interviews talking about being asked about all the work that he does off the field. So certainly would be by all accounts would be a class act off the field, and certainly has the athleticism and the drive to be a great linebacker at the next level.
All right. Well, we're almost at 40 minutes. I think that's a good cutoff point. So why don't you do the roll down with what people can check out this upcoming week, and also where they can find the podcast.
Yep. This week we're going through round one of our mock draft. So as of the end of Tuesday, we're through the first 12 picks. We'll be rolling next six out on Wednesday. So keep an eye out on that. Let's see. Our pick is about to come up in the SB Nation mock draft, so keep an eye out for that as well. That should be coming out by the end of this week. And
fans will love the punter you chose for them.
Oh, Tom Hackett's great. He's another great interview. So you'll have fun with that one. And he's Australian, so that's always fun. But
Yeah,
no, I
we
did
need
not
more.
select a punter at 27, just for the record. Don't everybody flip out on me here.
Text traded
But
up to get him.
yeah. Oops. Was that wrong? Anyway, yeah, so acmepackingcompany.com. Check it out at Acme Packing Co. Twitter, at Tex Western, at by JBH.
That's by
You know where
underscore
to find us.
JBH. The person who has
Thanks.
at by JBH will not give it up.
Oh, well, what a jerk. Sorry. Yep, by underscore JBH. Make sure you get that right.